The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the speaker. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice from your own physician.
Hello, everybody. I'm Dr. Ram Hadass, a medical scientist at Texas Beck Institute. Next to me, we have a special guest, Dr. Jacob Sikora, a spine surgeon fellow at Texas Beck Institute. We are both NASS committee members for patient education. The podcast topic of today will be function outcome measure in spine testing, and today we'll focus about balance. After listening to this podcast, you'll know the basics and clinical definition of balance. You will understand why balance is so important for patients' quality of life. You'll be able to define and know what calls for altering balance, how we can measure someone's balance in clinic or just measure it at your own home, and we'll talk about some advanced testing of balance. So, Dr. Sikora, let me start with a question. How do you define balance when it comes to your patients?
So, clinically, balance is the ability to keep steady in preventing a fall. And keep in mind, as we age, a simple fall is a greater risk to our health. Whether standing in a single spot or moving, the goal should be to do so with minimal effort.
So why this is so important?
So moving throughout the home or walking on a busy street, balance helps us move efficiently and prevents falls. Balance is also critical with enhancing your ability to perform high-level tasks like exercise and sports. Whether standing in a line at a grocery store or playing sports like soccer, balance is central to all these activities.
How does one know if they have good balance or bad balance?
That can be hard to define. So most of us don't have specialized tools to evaluate ourselves at home, but we can stand on one leg at a time or evaluate our walking in a straight line. Poor balance, on the other hand, is easier to define. If standing with eyes closed is a struggle, dizziness while standing, or even loss of confidence in movements, further evaluation might be a good idea. A history of falls is a red flag. If someone has repetitive flaws or falls, they've already proven that their balance is off. So if someone is unable to stand steady without holding on to objects, or if they don't know where their feet are in space, further evaluation is also recommended. I've had some of my patients say, "My feet feel drunk." And again, this would warrant an investigation.
So let me ask you another question. What can cause balance issues?
Lots of things. Some related to aging, some not. As we get older, many things aren't as tuned in as they used to be. Our vision gets worse. It's harder to focus on our surroundings, so our visual cues aren't there. Our balance system in our ears doesn't age well either, so we can develop vertigo. And of course, any trauma to the brain or spinal cord, infections in the brain or spinal cord, or disorders of the brain and nervous systems, weakness of certain muscles, all those things can affect balance and how we perceive it. Spine issues can be the icing on the cake to cause or contribute to these balance issues.
This just sounds like a complicated system.
Yeah, well, there's just so many possible inputs. If one has spinal cord compression from a spine issue, the signal from the brain to the extremities is getting disrupted. If a nerve is getting compressed, pain or weakness can make really moving efficient very difficult. Maintenance of balance requires unimpeded coordination between the central nervous systems and the muscles that it talks to. Upright stance and body stability depends on various complicated systems in the ears, the eyes, as well as the input. So when one's balance and function are detrimentally altered, it can have a profound effect on quality of life and activities of daily things.
This is very interesting. Let me ask you two questions. One, can your spine alignment affect your balance? And the second question, what does this have to do with your spine surgeon?
So most definitely, spine alignment can affect balance. So the spine and pelvis is the skeletal foundation for the human body. For a multitude of reasons, someone's spine can be off axis. So when people have deformities in the neck, deformities in the low back, in the ribs, the pelvis, your center of balance can be thrown off. It's much harder to stay centered and steady if your head is hunched way in front of your body. The same can be said if your spine is tilted to the side.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and on a related note, your postural control, the ability to stand up straight, is kind of the ability for your body to maintain the state of equilibrium or balance. And based on research from your lab, people with spinal disorders demonstrate increased postural sway, greater difficulty adapting to changing conditions. Moreover, once they lose balance, these individuals have a really hard time recovering it. On x-rays, there are different things we can measure to help us quantify this and put a number on it. But for example, we can measure how hunched the spine is or how far ahead the spine is of the pelvis, among other things. X-rays do not measure balance, but they can give us an idea of how hard your body must work to maintain good balance. The less aligned things are, the more effort is necessary to balance oneself.
So let me ask you this. Other than alignment, what are other spine sources?
So the brain is connected to the muscles throughout our body by the spinal cord and nerves. If there are bulging structures that compress these neural transmission highways, signals don't get transmitted. So the spinal cord can get compressed by bone spurs, disc, scar tissue, and can cause something called myelopathy. So often these patients have a horrible sense of where their bodies are in space. The spinal cord, particularly these dorsal columns, provide sensory feedback.
When you said dorsal, you mean posterior or the back part?
Yeah, so the dorsal columns are in the back of the spinal cord, and they relay your position, your two-point discrimination, and things like vibration. So they play an important role in maintaining postural stability while conveying sensory information, such as deep sensation to the lower limbs. So when these dorsal columns or the back part of the spinal cord are compressed, your function of vibration, sensibility, and proprioception, or kind of where you are in space, are compromised. The spinal cord compression causes impaired balance because of these proprioceptive losses, and patients also develop loss of control of their legs. The limbs, the arms and legs, they're confused, so making standing and walking hard. Branching nerves can be pushed by these same entities, making a leg weak or painful. This can change the ability to stand firmly, may change the shift in the hips and pelvis, or can cause a withdrawal reflex, which can change how weight is dispersed. But, Dr. Hadass, how can balance be measured?
It's a good question. As you mentioned, Dr. Sikora, balance deficiency is the ability of a person to maintain their center of gravity with a minimal neuromuscular energy expenditure, so less using the muscles to sway. Maintain of balance requires coordination between the central nervous system and the neuromuscular system. There are actually several ways to measure balance, and some of them you can do at home. The first and the most simple one is try to stand with your feet touching side by side and close your eyes. You should be able to stand for at least 30 seconds without swaying or losing your balance. Another test you can do is stand with your feet tandem, so one foot in front of the other, and close your eyes. Here again, you should be able to stand for at least 30 seconds without swaying or losing your balance. This is a simple test, but many people have difficulty with it, especially when balance is overall poor. Another good test we have is try to stand and reach forward with outreaching arms as far as you can while standing. You should be able to reach forward confidently about 25 centimeters, which is about 10 inches, without losing your balance. Got two more tests, more advanced, but you can do it at your home. It's try to stand on one leg. You should be able to stand on one leg for 30 seconds without swaying or losing your balance. If you're close to this goal, this is great. And the last one, try to do the same thing. Stand on one leg and then close your eyes. You should be able to stand for at least 20 seconds without swaying or losing your balance. So the ability to complete one or two of these successfully is a great place to start. However, if you have trouble, it's time to seek for medical profession guidance.
So medical professional, like a physical therapist?
Yes, it can be a physical therapist or our spine caregiver. when you go to this spine caregiver, they may assess your balance in several ways. Evaluation based on a self-report questionnaires requiring activity level and full history are the most common one they're using in a clinical setting. Other functional evaluations such as the Romberg test, time up and go, balance error scoring, and others are really common use in practice as well. And in more advanced setting, as example as a biomechanics or gait laboratory setting, healthcare providers are able to provide more detailed information about your balance, such as sway level, center of pressure, and cone of balance or cone of economy dimension. Recently, a method that quantified a patient's cone of economy using a three-dimensional video system was developed by my colleagues and myself. This method quantified the cone of economy dimension by measuring the range of sway and balance effort for each patient. This dynamic method has now been used to explore balance in patients with adult degenerative scoliosis, cervical splenic myelopathy, degenerative lumbar spondylolisthesis, sacroiliac joint dysfunctions, and many other spine patients.
So, Dr. Hadass, these are obviously great tests, and let's discuss how we can diagnose subtle balance issues using your lab tools.
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, we have developed a method that quantified patients' balance and cone of economy using a three-dimensional human motion capture system and electromyography. This method provides you with fine details on your balance and cone of economy dimensions. The cone of economy is an estimate of how big is your sway while you're standing, walking, or sitting. This method is able to measure the balance effort by range of sway, side of the cone of economy, and dynamic compensatory mechanism for each patient. There's several ways that people compensate to get back to the center. The main two are using the ankle or hip joint. Although the ankle and hip joint movement in standing have been identified as the common compensatory mechanism, some studies have described how one strategy or combination of both strategies can be preferred over another different situation. So since 2014, we have been using this method in my lab, in specific in patients with adult degenerative scoliosis, cervical malapathy, degenerative lumbar spondylolisthesis, sacroiliac joint dysfunctions, and many other spinal disorder patients. Several studies have attempted to quantify balance and compensatory mechanism in spinal disorder patients before and after surgical or non-surgical intervention using both the 3D video kinematic and a force plate. Highlights of our studies on balance show clear distinguished differences in balance effort values and cone of economy dimension between degenerative spinal pathologies and healthy control group. Using our method can provide more detailed information to spine care practitioners on their patient's balance pattern and postures. The clinical importance of these measurements allows spine caregivers to assess the severity of patient's balance, balance pattern, and dynamic postures, and record the changes following surgical interventions. Then clinicians should compare expect similar or differences in economy parameters among symptomatic patients for a different cohort to guide their post-operative prognosis.
So you've been at this for a while, I mean, since 2014. What type of recent changes or new developments have you guys found?
So last year, we developed a simplified version of this test by using only a force plate. A force plate is a fancy bedroom scale that you stand on and it measures your pressure. We figured that motion capture is expensive and complex equipment, which is a barrier for adaptation for clinical use and measuring the cone of economy. However, force plates are less expensive and can be used in a clinical setting. After investigating over 400 spinal surgical candidates and over 50 healthy controls, we were able to develop a new method for estimate cone of economy using a force plate rather than traditional motion capture. This method provides surgeon and spine caregiver with a practical method for producing objective global balance data via cone of economy prediction from a force plate. Several benefits are anticipated from these quantified tools to assist with preoperative planning for patient-specific alignment objective and also prognostic information, recovery monitoring, and treatment data. This could lower the entry burden of measurements of the cone of economy in patients, enabling whisk-sparing use. This would provide surgeon objective global balance data that could assist with surgical decision-making, facilitate objective monitoring of surgical outcome.
So, I mean, has this led to any type of classification system or anything prognostic?
Yeah, so early this year, we came up with a unique classification system for the cone of economy measurements that define clinical significant changes in outer balance, and we're able to assess if the cone of economy measurements directly impact patients' reported outcome. By classifying the cone of economy measurements by the system we develop, clinically significant alternation in balance can be quantified. Furthermore, we demonstrate that across spinal pathology, higher magnitude of cone of economy and range of sway measures are correlated with worsening of patients' reported outcome measures. So now let me ask you a question, Dr. Sakura. How do you use this information in your clinic?
Well, the research and use of this info is growing. We're just in the infancy of its application. Very simply, we can use this information to assess, one, how the patient is progressing through the treatment process, and two, allow patients to see how others have fared.
And don't forget that the therapist can use this information too. They are more objective than typical questionnaires.
Yeah, of course. I mean, these video analyses are very powerful. And even to the untrained patient's eye, it can give a lot of information that's difficult to put into words. For a patient to see the changes in balance and walking is indescribable. Our clinic has also given patients handouts of their results. So these break down steps, cadence, sway, and compare it to how they did before and after surgery, as well as compared to quote-unquote healthy controls. Over time, we're hoping to scientifically classify the severity of balance issues and be able to make treatment recommendations based on scientific evidence.
Thank you. This is great information. So in summary, we look at the definition of balance and why balance is so important for patients' quality of life. We also clarified what calls for altering balance and how we can measure someone's balance in clinic or just self-test at home. And lastly, we explore our more advanced testing of balance. That's all for today, guys. Thank you for listening for this podcast. Feel free to share this podcast or tell your friends and family members about it. I would like to thank Dr. Sakura. I'm Dr. Ramadas, and see you on the next podcast.